Hey, and welcome to the Friday postgame. Thank you, Bart, for another inspiring piece of music to bring us in. That was arguably even worse than the last time, which is a tall order.
The kazoo?
The kazoo, yeah. I'm here, of course, with Steve-O, who I don't know why we scheduled the Friday postgame in the middle of your lunch hour. I apologize for that, but don't mind us. You just go ahead and finish. And, of course, Dave Kohler. And for those of you who are relatively new to the Friday postgame or new members, Steve and Dave are both very high-level executives at TYT, but also longtime TYT people, you know, in sort of the original court. Dave was employee number one, according to the Mad as Hell, the movie.
Yeah, there's different ways of counting.
Right, but Steve and Dave both, went to high school with Cenk and have been with the Young Turks for a long time and used to be regulars on the main show, would chime in back when the show was shot in a very small studio and everybody who worked at TYT was on the show, essentially. And then we got bigger, moved into a new studio, and Dave and Steve got more responsibilities and had to do other things, so their voices were lost, which is a shame. And so we brought them back on the Friday postgame, and the fans, longtime fans who loved them back then, get to enjoy them again, and new fans who didn't know you guys get to enjoy you now, or maybe say, I liked it better when they were not around.
And for those who are curious, I'm eating a delicious Trader Joe's chicken burrito of some sort with green chilies or whatever. It's excellent.
Okay, and that's probably what a lot of people were wondering.
They were wondering.
Okay.
Because if you see someone eating something and you can't quite see what they're eating, you're wondering, what are they eating?
I don't care. Does that
no,
happen to you?
I don't.
Yeah, that's not me. I'm sure you're a food guy.
I love food.
Yeah. So it makes sense that you do that. Edwin, do you do that or are you not paying attention? No.
I love how I call myself a foodie while I'm eating a Trader Joe's frozen burrito.
Listen, Trader Joe's has, I mean, just because something is, you know, hastily prepared or frozen or what have you, doesn't mean it's not good. It can still be very tasty.
So I'm a big fan of Trader Joe's, and I generally trust their buyers. Their stuff is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Okay, so what we do here on the Friday postgame, it's a little different from the regular postgame with Cenk and Anna, where they talk about their personal lives or do additional stories. We have various bits we do. We talk about a little bit of inside baseball. The first thing I usually do is talk about the image behind us. Can either of you guess what it is or why? This image, it looks pretty generic, beachy, so I can't imagine you're going to guess what it is.
Greece.
It's not Greece.
Santa Monica.
It's not Santa Monica. It is Grenada.
Mm.
And today, or at least, we're shooting this on Thursday, by the way. We shoot the show on Thursday and it airs on Friday. So if there's any big news that breaks on Friday and we didn't mention it, that's why. So it's Grenada, which 35 years ago today was invaded by the United States, a small Caribbean country. And it was, I don't know, we were young. We were early teens.
Early teens.
Or, you know, and I don't know how you, what you thought about it at the time or paid any attention to it, but I know a lot of people were thinking that this was finally the United States was reimposing itself upon the world and we're not afraid to invade other countries anymore, that we had, we failed in Vietnam, we were sort of, our efforts in the Central America were at a standstill essentially, but we won Grenada, which is this tiny country.
Did we win that one? That was great. We crushed, didn't we?
Yeah. It wasn't much of a contest, really. Although there was a Clint Eastwood movie and a Psychedelic Furs song that came out of it. There was a coup took place there. The prime minister and other in the cabinet were killed in the coup. And they were taken over by Marxists, or at least purported Marxists. And so Ronald Reagan said, we can't have Marxists in the Caribbean. Next thing you know, they'll be in Cuba. We invaded and took over and reinstated the former government, I believe. And
unfortunately, I think Grenada was the model for our war in Iraq. I think they thought they're gonna have the same results.
Probably.
Yeah.
A little more complicated.
Well, 3 years later, we did the same thing in Panama, kind
of. Right. Similar thing in Panama.
And didn't the Grenada thing occur within days of the Marine barracks bombing in Beirut? It was like. Back then, big Newsweek that now would blow up TYT, but back then.
Right, it was 3 or 4 days after.
Yeah.
Because I remember hearing about the anniversary of the Marine Barracks. I don't remember the date of it, but I remember hearing a couple days ago that anniversary. It was a period where we were feeling like weakened and we were under attack, and this is a way of exerting ourselves and showing the world who's boss by taking over a tiny Caribbean nation. I don't know. I'd be interested in investigating how Grenada is doing now, but I didn't have time. All I could do was grab this lovely photo. But it's the Caribbean, and it looks very nice. Yeah, so that's. But that's a. But I imagine for people who are like Edwin, do you know anything about Grenada, or that we invaded Grenada? Does that? You, I mean, at least you know that. But if, I'm sure for a lot, Edwin knows everything. He's not a good person. But I think a lot of people who were born since 1980 probably Grenada. The fact that we invaded this country is lost to history for them.
Right.
But. Not here on the Friday postgame. So we have a couple of items that Steve and Dave have brought to us that they want to talk about today. First, we're going to go to Dave, and you want to talk about recently about Politicon and something that went on at Politicon, specifically Tucker Carlson and Cenk Uygur's debate there.
Yeah, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip about Politicon and Cenk and Tucker Carlson, but just get to the point that I wanted to make. So Cenk and Tucker Carlson were supposed to have a debate on many subjects. The first subject that the moderator brought up is immigration. So right there already, to me, I want to see what you think. Immigration is not that important. Like, it's being brought up by Trump and the Republicans as a wedge issue to get votes. But just the fact that this moderator brought up immigration first and they spent like 45 minutes talking about it drove me crazy.
Okay.
So I want to say that because there's a Friday postgame show and I get to say that.
So your issue is with you're not saying, oh, I disagree with Cenk or I agree with Tucker, anything like that. It's just the whole premise.
That there's a crisis or that immigration is an issue that has to be addressed before global warming, taxes, economy, whatever else.
Right.
Tucker Carlson and Cenk had a very civil conversation. Most observers said that and they were surprised. They thought it would be a battle and they thought Tucker Carlson would be a jerk, but he wasn't. It was a nice civil conversation. That's good. But it was all on his terms. Tucker Carlson opened, he said some stuff, and Cenk said the usuals, you know, immigrants are good for the country, not bad for the country. Immigrant, it's a country, the U.S. is multicultural, not single cultural. There's no evidence that undocumented immigrants increase crime rates in the community. He said all these things.
They add to the tax base, but they don't
take. Right, they add because they pay Social Security and taxes.
And they never take it.
But
that's, Cenk, that's the undocumented.
Cenk and the whole liberal side, I'm still unclear what their position is toward immigration. What do they want?
Right.
Or do they want nothing? Status quo?
And well, I mean, I think, you know, you say immigration, immigration reform.
You don't have to laugh. It's made fun of in the mainstream media, but it's
but the argument
ridiculous.
For open borders, I mean, not, you know, it doesn't exist in a vacuum. There would have to be other things that happen besides to get open. But one thing that I think is interesting by bringing up immigration first and giving it this kind of priority, that, as you point out, buys into the right-wing framing of what the priorities are in this country. And Cenk should have said, we only have an hour. Immigration is not that big a deal. The economy is a big deal. Climate change is much bigger deal. But, of course, he can't. I mean, it's the moderator.
So for Republicans, immigration, that's the number one issue.
Especially right now.
Yeah, right now. And the number two issue for them is, shockingly, health care. For the Democrats, they've made health care their number one issue, which is a smart thing to do, I think.
Definitely, because they have, I mean, except that the problem is the Democrats as a group or collectively or the powers that be in the Democratic Party are not willing to buy into the most popular policy, which
it's
is
really
Medicare
stupid.
For all.
Yeah, and the Democratic leadership is not leading with a push for, universal health care of any kind. So that's bad, but they just want the status quo, the leadership. The ones who are out there campaigning, especially the ones who are seeking office, are running on health care because—
Are running on Medicare for all specifically.
Right, because that's an issue that resonates with almost everyone. Everyone has health care issues. So
I cut you off after my question. I can articulate what the right-wing Republican position on immigration is. They want less of it. They want to criminalize it. They want to deport, blah, blah, blah. But what's the left, the Cenk Uygur, the Democrat, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whatever left representative you want to pick, what is their position on immigration? Is that there is
I don't know, but I assume it's, you know, a pathway to citizenship and, you know, immigration reform in general, the dream, you know, protect the dreamers. I mean, it's not.
So it's a piecemeal thing. Fix this thing, fix this, fix it. Yeah, which is fine.
I mean, I don't know if they want to change our immigration policies about the number of people who are allowed in from individual countries. I mean, that seems like such a pie in the sky effort now, like you wouldn't even be talking about that because what we're talking about now is just keeping the Republicans from further restricting what we've got. So, and that's what Democrats do in general is just fight, you know, rear guard actions constantly and very, except when they need to run for office potentially and get votes, the people who are smart, then they will run on certain policies that are popular.
And that's exactly my point. The Republicans are doing a lot of things on immigration
and the Democrats are fighting each one of them individually as a rear guard action.
But your point about Democrats and immigration is well taken, especially with regard to, for example, the Beto O'Rourke-Ted Cruz race, because Beto is counting on a lot of Latinos coming out for him, even though Ted Cruz is also Latino. But the Democratic Party has not taken a strong, we are not protecting the Dreamers. We're not out there advocating on behalf of all these immigrants who have, you know, who are in the limbo, political limbo, and allowing Donald Trump to say, oh, it's the Democrats who are leaving you and leaving you hanging. So I think that they, because they don't want to take a firm position, or they're pusillanimous is what they are, Democrats in general. So they don't want to go aggressive on this issue. So they're not going to get the votes. There's this expectation from Democrats that people will just vote for them just because they're not Donald Trump.
Yeah, right.
And people aren't. It's just not going to work. And so, but we can talk about this later when we do predictions about the election. You got any other thoughts on?
No.
All right. So Steve also. So such a rarity. Steve also bringing a topic to the Friday post game. Really impressed with the effort you guys have put forward this week. It's
true.
Yeah, extraordinary.
I actually care this time. I sent a link to an article.
Yes.
So that's the extent of my preparation for this.
And you talked to me about it a little bit.
So I want to talk about which is my camera. Is it this one?
Yeah.
I want to talk about Sears. So Sears went bankrupt recently, and we all know of Sears, even if you don't really shop there. You know, I've had a couple of personal experiences with Sears, so I'll address that first. When I was a lawyer, in New York City for a big law firm there, we were hired to do an internal investigation of Sears, because Sears was caught, breaking bankruptcy laws by going after bankrupt Sears cardholders and coercing them to pay their debt to Sears before they pay their debts to anyone else, which is illegal. You can't do that. And there was like smoking gun evidence about that.
That the company had sanctioned this at the very top levels, not that these were rogue agents who had gone to the Saudi embassy in Turkey to get those.
By the way, that is one of the worst things to do, where you go as lawyers, outside lawyers, you go into some company and you just go to people's offices and you just say, you have to leave and we're going to seize all your documents and we're going to rifle through. Oh, it was the worst.
But you're not even the feds or something. You're the company is
the company.
Oh.
So the workers there were pissed, but management hired us to do this. So that was a dark moment of my legal career, where I spent every single day from like 7 a.m. until midnight rifling through people's documents, looking for incriminating evidence so we could figure out a reason to fire them or whatever, right? Oh, it was awful.
Pin the blame on them for this when it was actually, but like, didn't the people who were hiring you, did the board hire you?
Yes. So like the board hired us to go through and see, you know, which executives and which assistants and which mid-level managers were involved. Some of it was, I don't know what it was for. I mean, were they going to fire these people? Were they going to turn them over to the DOJ? I don't know. But that was my personal connection to Sears. And Sears, as you know, they had for a long time the tallest building in America in Chicago. At this point, they'd already moved out to the suburbs. I think they were in Schaumburg or something like that out there. I was just in Chicago this past weekend, and I saw the old Sears Tower. It's now called the Wallace or the Willis, the Willis Tower. It's called Willis. So that's my first experience with Sears. A couple years later, I move out to LA, and my wife and I buy our first home, and we want to buy some appliances. I want to buy a refrigerator and some washing machine and a dryer. So I try to open a Sears card, and they freaking reject me. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what?
No one rejects.
Nobody gets rejected from Sears. I saw the people who had Sears cards a couple years ago during my investigation. Everyone had a Sears card, okay? And we didn't have any kids yet. We're two lawyers earning a pretty high income.
They blackballed you.
Why did I not get a Sears card? It was unbelievable. So I was like, I wonder if I got blackballed. But the reason why I bring up Sears is that, there was a really interesting story I heard about Sears on NPR. So Sears was kind of like an Amazon before Amazon. So back in the day, they had the Sears catalog. And the Sears catalog, it turns out, revolutionized the way people buy things, especially in the segregated Jim Crow South. So, if you're a black farmer.
Sharecropper, more likely.
Yeah. Or you're a black business owner. Or you're just a black guy or a black woman trying to buy anything in the segregated South. If you go to the store, you just stand there and wait until all the white customers are served first. For some reason, that really just like at a gut level, it was just awful. Because of course slavery is terrible, of course Jim Crow is terrible. But the notion that you just stand there and everyone gets to cut in front of you. If one person cuts me in line when I'm at the bank or something, I get pissed, right?
This is so funny because
it's so visceral,
I don't know what it's like to have a family member lynched.
Yes.
But I know what it's like to be cut in line. So that's what's going to get me up in arms.
I like how you say, for some reason that bothers me. The reason is quite obvious. Yeah. It's a massive injustice.
I know, but like
but that in particular, said, why that
you know. Injustice is small compared to all the other injustices, but that one resonated because it's like a personal thing you identify with on a very readily basis. The notion you just stand there and every person gets to cut you.
Yeah, and you're like, oh man, just one person, and I'll finally be in the front, and then like eight more people come in, people wipe you, and you're just like sit back down.
And sometimes the store owner's like, you know what? Never mind, I'm not gonna sell it to you after all.
Yeah,
like what? I was waiting for 2 hours to buy this one thing that I need for today, and all these people cut in line, and now you're not gonna sell it to me. Like, this is ridiculous.
And you have no
right?
recourse.
You have no recourse. So so things changed for the better for them when the Sears catalog came, because they just order through the catalog and get their stuff without being subjugated to these awful humiliations. So Sears catalogs challenge not just the way people buy things, but they challenge the very white supremacist power structure. So a lot of the white store owners and other people in the South did not like this. So they would take Sears catalogs and have these big Sears catalog burning sessions. And you know, as the old adage goes, you know, where they burn books, they will also burn people, right? And they did. You know, they lynched them and burned them. So people had to go around, you know, all kinds of hoops to get to order stuff from their Sears catalog because, you know, a black family that got it might get it taken away. The post office might not deliver it or whatever.
But so, Sears also had various processes in place to help people.
Yes.
And workarounds. And for recent immigrants, they had people in all different languages. But you can understand, I mean, even if the black or the white-owned businesses didn't like the idea of black people not having to shop there, it's also losing business because they did shop there. So it's direct competition. But you can couch it in terms of racism and appeal to white Southerners' racism so they don't buy from Sears.
It was fascinating, the collision of two forces, right? This mass consumerism that this country is kind of built on, and you know, individual rights, and the racist infrastructure, the systemic institutionalized racism that we had, they're all colliding because of the Sears catalog. So I thought that was very interesting.
Well, the Sears catalog, the funny thing is that is only, burning it is only the second worst thing people used to do, the Sears catalog, because, and I don't know, I didn't read a story about this, but one of the things I remember hearing about with the Sears catalog is that, you know, we just get delivered this giant book with all this paper in it, and you had, instead of ordering toilet paper from the catalog, you would just hang the catalog in your outhouse and use it one page at a time. I'm absolutely serious. That's what a lot of people use the Sears catalog for, or old Sears catalogs for. And the other thing is the Sears catalog, it was the first introduction in many, many young men's lives to images of women's underclothing.
Yes.
And that so it had a, there's a, you know, there were those who objected to it on a, you know, that it was pornography.
It's true. I mean, I laugh because, you know, today you can go to the internet and see any kind of porn that you want.
Wait, where?
But as a boy, I had no access to any of that stuff. So I remember seeing the Sears catalog, just flipping through and just being shocked by the bra section. I was like, oh my God, what is this?
Where have you been all my life? you were an immigrant family, but that was a uniquely American experience you were having. And the Sears catalog is, a real piece of Americana that doesn't exist anywhere else. And it tells, you know, the story of the Sears catalog tells the story of America from when they started sending out till when it, you know, became defunct. You got any personal Sears catalog stories, Dave?
No, but we grew up in the suburbs. Steve would know. Pretty much there was nothing within a few miles, but there's randomly a Sears very close to my house. So we went there more than usual.
Yeah, but it's sort of, you know, there's a sadness of the fact that Sears is going bankrupt. And yeah. I don't know the details of why, but I assume much like Toys R Us and like it's, yeah. you know, it's the vulture hedge funds that have come in. And I'd like to somebody do a comparison of why Best Buy is thriving and Sears is going under, because Best Buy is a brick and mortar store. But everyone's, you know, they claim that Sears and Toys R Us, they just can't compete with Amazon. But it's really just these hedge funds coming in and, you know, sucking all the money out and then leaving the desiccated corpse of these long-standing brands to just dissipate and die. But that's not what's happening with Best Buy. I went into a Best Buy the other day, and it was me and my father and about 18 people who worked at Best Buy. It was the middle of the day, and I'm like, how is this place still open?
Well, this might happen to Best Buy in a few years.
Yes, that's true. That's true. That's possible. So
they had a second life here recently.
All right, so we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is a game that we like to call Weekly World News.
Weekly World News.
Can't stop doing this segment just because I went to so much trouble to put that intro together. So the way this works, for those of you who don't know, is I call stories from around the globe, typically that are not covered on the main show, because the main show doesn't cover international stories unless they, you know, relate to, you know, an American resident being bonesawed to death in a Saudi embassy or other stories that somehow impact the United States. So I wanted to cover more international stories on the Friday Post game. Steve and Dave were agreeable, but they never read any of the stories that I sent to them. So in the interest of making lemonade out of lemons, I turned into a quiz where I have five questions from five different places around the globe, and they have to answer them I provide them in multiple choice format. You get to play along at home. It's a fun time. Get your pencils ready. Oh, but first, guys, you're both on your goddamn phones.
I've heard this before.
I know how this works.
You're going to pick two names because we're playing for t-shirts.
Yeah, but I was going to go on without picking any names because I had forgotten all about it.
No, we wouldn't have wanted
right.
to do that.
So these are names of members of the Proud 19, the fans of the Friday Post game who have commented and all their various aliases that they use. If you comment on the Friday Post game, your name will be added. And so I'm going to get a member that Dave's going to pick a member name, Steve is going to pick a member name, and they're going to play for them. And if one of them wins, that member wins not a t-shirt, but the opportunity to solicit a t-shirt from us and hope that that t-shirt is delivered. If it's a tie, both get to solicit t-shirts. Yeah, so let's have Dave. Dave is going to pick his first, and he has selected
Fake Brazilian.
Fake Brazilian. You're going to hold up to give it a shot. What the heck?
It's Fake Brazilian.
It's Fake Brazilian. Fake underscore Brazilian. There it is. All right. So you hold on to Fake Brazilian. And now Steve is going to pick his. And he has selected
Amber Fiend.
Amber Fiend, yeah. I might have misspelled it, but I think
I'm glad you made the text a little bigger.
They may have. I didn't do that at all. But I can someday when I have time. Amber Fiend. Okay, so that's who Steve is playing for. That's who Dave is playing for. And now we go on to the first story, which comes to us from where?
Brazil.
Brazil is correct.
Hey! What? This is collusion. Collusion.
Well, I should. I mean, my guy really wants me to get this.
Yeah, you should. But, you have a built-in edge on South American. All right, so the question is this. Far-right presidential candidate Jair Bolsonaro's campaign was recently shaken by allegations of what? Was it A, supporters spreading slanderous fake news about his opponent, B, human rights violations committed by his father during Brazil's military rule, C, closer than previously disclosed ties to a notorious Brazilian underworld figure, or D, that his mistress is insufficiently patriotic because she refuses to get a Brazilian wax? All right, so think about it. Connor, you play at home. We encourage you at home to...
This is clearly just a pretext to talk about the Brazilian election. we did this. I mean, not this story.
But... Well, it's an important story. We do important international stories here, Dave. All right, we have an answer of C from Steve and A from Dave. Let us know, Brendan, what is the correct answer? It is... come back to where is it? Okay, the correct answer is... Hey! Oh, Dave.
By the way, I have to apologize. On last week's postgame show, I said the Brazilian second round election was this past Sunday, and I was wrong about
that. No, it's the 28th.
It's coming up, yeah.
You also said that I grab a lot of images just off the internet without getting, but in truth, the fact is that I try, at least whenever I can, to use copyright-free images.
Oh, okay.
So, shows what you know, although you knew this one.
And you know I didn't know it.
And you knew, I mean, this is too much. Fake Brazilian, first stories about, you know, about Brazil, about fake news. Come on. This is
obvious. Steve is
this is collusion.
It's a false flag operation.
Yeah.
Clearly the Democrats did this.
It's like the 1985 NBA draft lottery. We all know it.
All right, so let's find out about this story. Yes, Brazil fake news scandal hits country's presidential election. Bolsonaro appears to be at least temporarily shaken by reports his backers allegedly flooded voters with fake. No way, I haven't gotten there yet. I haven't started yet. Come back. Okay. So, so Bolsonaro is his far right candidate. He's Lula was the leftist, center leftist candidate who is in prison, and it was deemed that he can't run. And this far right guy, there he is, Jair Bolsonaro. He is he's leading in polls like 59% to 41% to his center left rival Fernando Haddad, who was Lula's vice presidential candidate, but now he's presidential candidate. But Bolsonaro is, from all appearances, a horrible guy. Like, you know, makes Donald Trump look like he's looks like Bernie Sanders. He openly praises Brazil's military dictatorship from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and he's called for violence against his opponents. Although Trump has done that. All right, so let's go to the story. On Thursday, Bolsonaro's campaign appeared to be at least temporarily shaken as Brazil's Folha de São Paulo newspaper reported that businessmen and companies were secretly financing the mass spread of slanderous messages about Haddad via the online messaging platform WhatsApp. According to the newspaper, the practice constitutes an electoral crime, as all political campaign donations must be declared, and donations from companies were banned in 2015, a practice introduced to tackle corruption. So, technically speaking, if these charges are proven, it could force Bolsonaro from the ticket, or to pull his name. That's unlikely. The election is in a week. And he, of course, is disputing it. He's saying that he had nothing to do with it and that he's just blaming his political opponents for slandering him and that Haddad is a scoundrel. There will be investigations. The Brazil's federal police is looking into it. But fake news, as you know, fake news is just part and parcel. It's par for the course for any election, any major election, and Brazil is no different. And Bolsonaro is the main beneficiary of it in Brazil. So but there's been a lot of violence in Brazil surrounding the election. There was a transgender woman who was killed, a murder of capoeira master Moa de Catende. Capoeira, I don't know if that's, I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's a martial art that. Is popular in Brazil, was killed, who was allegedly by a Bolsonaro supporter. But there's no question this guy is a bad guy. Let's go back to the story. Observers worry that if Bolsonaro is elected, an iron-fisted crackdown on Brazil's spiraling crime problem with more than 63,000 homicides last year could lead to a greater even explosion of violence, disproportionately affecting marginalized groups. We hope that control of any excesses would be made by Brazil's democratic institutions and that the outrageous remarks he made throughout his career weren't serious and won't be put into practice, said Bruno Pais Manso, a researcher at the Nucleus of Violence Studies at the University of Sao Paulo. And that I thought that was interesting because it sounds a lot like what we heard when Donald Trump was elected.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, he says these horrible things, but when he's elected, it turns out, I'm sure he'll rise to the occasion. And that seems like utter folly. The idea that this guy is going to say these things and not follow through is preposterous, and it's just you're hoping based on nothing, and the odds are more likely that he will turn into another Duterte.
Right.
So, you know, all of these authoritarian figures rise to power by blaming some outside group. You know, Trump did that here. He launched his campaign by saying Mexicans are sending their rapists and murderers, that they're rapists and murderers. With this guy, who is he marginalizing? Is it like different indigenous groups within Brazil? Is there like an immigrant community coming into Brazil that he's scapegoating? What is he doing to harness his power and get elected?
I think he is scapegoating the left in general and saying that the country is mismanaged and there's corruption, and he's going to clean it up. He's going to bring back the rule of law. And, you know, there's crime in the streets. He's going to clean it up, you know, and, I mean, he's made it clear that he is willing to use extrajudicial means to tamp down crime, or at least and
so he's okay with like stop and frisk.
More like stop and
punch in the face and.
I mean, I think he will accuse a lot of people in Brazil, poor people, anybody who's allegedly involved in criminal activity, of starting a fist fight that he and 15 other guys had to finish, much like the Saudis do. I mean, he's going to, like Duterte, I think, in the same way.
Yeah.
I don't think Duterte scapegoats outsiders as much as Donald Trump does, and some do, because maybe that's not as much of an issue in the Philippines or in Brazil with, you know, immigrants and the like. But everybody is subject or affected by crime or the perception of it. Here in the United States, you got all these people who are worried about MS-13. Like, nobody's going to out to, you know, rural Missouri, and MS-13 is not committing crimes there. But if you stoke the fears enough, so I think that's what he's doing to a degree. But there's no question that crime is a serious issue in Brazil. So, and he's just using it to his advantage. But it is disappointing that like 60% of the people are willing to go for this guy because he is reprehensible. I'll be interested to see, and also, I mean, guess what? He's not super friendly to the gays, and
the environment, which
the environment,
yeah,
he's the complete package, and going to be a disaster. And it looks like he's going to win. We can hope that he doesn't, but it doesn't look good right now. All right, our next story comes to us from India. That's right. I've done three stories, we've done India three sessions in a row. It's a big country. It's got a lot of interesting going on. And the question is this. Opposition parties are planning protests over an allegedly corrupt government contract for what? Was it A, British tanks, B, French fighter jets, C, Russian submarines, or D, German porn? This is the government purchase.
Well, D is certainly the scariest one out of the four.
You know, I mean, most devastating. It shocks the conscience, unlike the rest. All right, we have our answers, gentlemen. You have your answer at home?
I forgot what the choices were again.
What were the choices? Bring up the choices again, please. British tanks, French fighter jets, Russian submarines, or German porn? All right, Steve's pondering.
I'm going to go with the British.
He's going to answer
with French fighter jets.
Dave has an answer of B, and the correct answer is B, French fighter jets.
Bullshit.
Ouch.
I'm telling you, this is rigged. This is rigged.
How did you know? Have you been researching on the side, Dave? You know that's cheating. All right. So what's the story here? Both these stories I found interesting partially because of what they say about the United States. The last one about how they're saying the same things about this guy that people were saying about Trump. This one. So there was a multi-billion-dollar deal for 36 Rafale French fighter jets made by the government of India. The ruling party and the opposition party has accused them of corruption. Not only them, but over 100 left-affiliated organizations are protesting. They're calling this a corrupt deal, and there are protests across the country, demonstrations, sit-ins all week, intended to raise awareness about this scam. But there also happens to be a tightly contested election taking place in a few months in India. So the political parties are both gearing up for that, and the left-wing parties want to describe this as one of the major wrongdoings of the ruling right-wing party of Minister Narendra Modi. He signed, we have a picture of Modi, I think, somewhere. He signed an $8.7 billion deal there. Yeah, this is when you see an image of somebody and there's like a head in front of the image of the person, that probably means that there's no copyright problem.
All right, and where do you get it? That doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'll fill you in later.
Yeah.
So yeah, in 2016, Modi signed an $8.7 billion deal for these 36 fighter planes from France. It's the country's first acquisition of fighter planes in two decades. But since then, he's faced criticism. Let's go to the story. Opposition party. Well, I guess we don't have one. Wait, forget that. Forget. Come back to us for a second. I'm sorry. So the opposition parties are saying that India overpaid for the planes, and they're questioning why this private firm that has some connections to the ruling party, no experience in the defense sector, was awarded the contract. Now we can go to the story. Former French President François Hollande, who approved the deal when he was in office, created a stir last month when he revealed that the Narendra Modi government in New Delhi forced Dassault Aviation to choose Ambani, that's the company that is associated, that has no defense experience, for the deal. "We had no choice. We took the partner that was given to us," Hollande was quoted as saying in an explosive interview to French investigative news service Mediapart. which I'm pronouncing in English, not in French. Modi has denied it. So this is so the French and Hollande, who's no longer in power, they blew. You can come
they
back.
Blew
to
the
us.
Whistle.
He blew the whistle. He felt no need to defend or protect Modi, but it is causing a huge stir. And so there have been a lot of calls for investigations, and they're going to keep going with the protests. And but of course, the ruling party has said no, it's a lie. They're just using this to attack Modi, and they're grasping at straws. But a week ago, the India Supreme Court asked the government to furnish details of the deal with France, and they're going to investigate. I like that as the row escalated, a French aviation blog published details of a meeting between two trades unions at Dassault, the private company that began developing the jet in the mid-80s. The documents purportedly say it was imperative and obligatory for Dassault Aviation to accept Reliance Aerospace in order to obtain the contract. So apparently, A, there's a French aviation blog.
Yeah.
And B, they're breaking big stories there.
Well, I'm curious about this Mediapart organization, how effective they are, French investigative journalism. I'd like to know more about that.
All right. Maybe you might have to learn how to pronounce it in French, though. Okay, so, and the company has defended themselves and said and the government is defending themselves, but my inclination is to assume that corruption, it's such a fact of life that the corruption is true. I don't see why Hollande and the French would be making it up. But what struck me about it compared to the United States is like we have such endemic corruption in our defense industry and the military contract. I mean, campaign contributions and all that, how everybody's back gets scratched. This would not be a big deal in the United States.
Well,
nobody would give
yes
two rats
and no.
Us.
So we have a friend who did a lot of work in India, and he said the most shocking thing the first couple of years was how endemic the corruption was. But it was like regular old-fashioned corruption where you had to pay someone.
Yeah, you bribe a police officer.
You bribe them to get anything done.
Yeah.
There has to be bribes. In the U.S., we've legalized it, so it appears cleaner, but it's just as dirty, probably dirtier, because it has that illusion of being clean. But I 100% believe that this is a corrupt deal with Modi and the $8.7 billion worth of contracts that were given out.
Yeah, I mean, it's unquestionable. But we have it at the high level.
Yes.
And it's legal.
Yes.
We have it illegal, and it's actually, to a degree, enforced at the low level.
Yes.
I mean, politicians, they don't usually go to jail. Well, occasionally they do for this low-level corruption stuff. You take this, for me to.
If I hand the politician an envelope with $500 in it, like they'll go to jail, right?
Right.
But if I make a $100,000 contribution to a PAC that gives him whatever he wants, that's totally fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's preposterous. But I feel like this sort of corruption is built into the American system. It's part of how we
right.
operate. And so the idea that this is getting like people are protesting out in the streets. We have a picture, an image of the protesters with the airplanes. Did we see that yet? You have that? No? No? Okay. I thought I sent it, but I guess I didn't. there it is.
I knew you did.
So these people they went to the trouble to get these cardboard cutouts of these planes with the right name and they're out there protesting. When was the last time you saw Americans protesting government corruption? So, in that regard, I'm actually sort of inspired by the Indian people. All right, let's go to our next story. Where does it come to us from? That's a good question. The answer is England. And the question is as follows. In preparation for a possible Brexit no deal with the EU in March, British authorities have begun doing what? Is it A, chartering supply ships that will bring in emergency food and medicines? B, arranging temporary housing for the influx of an unknown number of expats currently living elsewhere in Europe. C, reopening long-shuttered barracks, checkpoints, and other military installments along the Ireland-Northern Ireland border. Or D, blaming Bernie Sanders. God. Bart, we want more people to watch Bart, not fewer.
I feel bad for the podcasters.
All right, do we have our answers?
They don't even get to look.
We have
at
an
us.
Answer of A from Dave and C from Steve, and the correct answer is The correct answer is A.
Oh my God, oh. I'm obliterated by Dave today. I knew it from the beginning. This is, the fix is in.
The fix was in.
This one I actually knew.
This is unbelievable. No one's ever gotten three in a row correct on this program, ever.
Yeah,
in the history of weekly world news, this has never happened. This is completely unreliable. This is obviously some sort of weird collusion. Russian bots are definitely involved here.
I don't know
what's going on.
The Indian prime minister may be involved, some of them may be fighter planes.
This is unbelievable.
How are you doing at home? Are you doing as well as Steve?
I want an investigation.
Wow, but you know, truthfully, we've never had it over after three questions.
That has never happened.
This has never happened before.
We can skip the rest. All right, so the story is this. United Kingdom authorities are actually drawing up plans to charter a flotilla of supply ships to ferry in emergency food and medicines in the event that there is no deal in the Brexit negotiations with the EU. And let's go to the story. The cabinet was told that the heavily used Dover-Calais route could quickly become blocked by new customs controls on the French side, forcing Britain to seek alternative ways of bringing in critical supplies. The prospect of Britain facing shortages of perishable food and medicines provided a bleak backdrop to the cabinet discussions as Theresa May, the prime minister, urged her ministers to back her attempts to secure a breakthrough. So they're still negotiating, but they're not really getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the what's unfortunate about the position the British are in is that the EU is not inclined to give them, to cut them any breaks. So you want to leave? Go ahead. But if they leave, and there's no deal, they don't make arrangements, alternative arrangements for the Northern Ireland border, which mm-hmm. you were swayed by, and also, travel, of people's free travel, people's and goods, the way it's been previously, they're facing a serious crisis because 30% of English food comes from outside the country. And if they reinstate all the barriers, then it's going to back up dramatically on both sides, and it's going to be very difficult. So the EU and UK would be in different customs jurisdictions and would be expected to carry out checks on trade across the English Channel, just like they check trade that is international now, but they haven't had to do since the EU. But some people are saying this is crazy. We're actually going to run a ferry service of emergency supplies to supply the English people, but that's what it may come to. They would use less congested sea routes to charter ships to bring this stuff in. Car parts, food, medicine, other critical supplies. They did this in 1982 during the Falklands War, but the idea that they can commandeer or build or buy whatever enough ships to supply all of the United Kingdom with the goods they need before March is preposterous, really. So let's go back to the story. We are open to all kinds of ideas about how to keep supplies flowing in a no-deal Brexit, but it's hard to see where the extra ships would quickly be found, nor can I see how other UK ports could possibly handle the huge volumes currently going through the Dover Strait, said Pauline Bastedon, head of European policy at the Freight Transport Association. So this is like, you want to vote for Brexit, careful what you wish for, because it could be devastating, potentially. It's the kind of thing where you think, no, they wouldn't let it get to that point. Mm-hmm. But they're getting close. I mean, right. Theresa May is looking like she's going to ask for an extension, which it's already been a couple of years since the vote, or a year and a half, or whatever it was. When was it?
It's been the middle of 2016.
So it's been over 2 years, and they don't seem to. And there are the Northern Ireland border is a sticky issue. There's talk about that being really devastating for Irish relations, and maybe Northern Ireland trying to secede from the United Kingdom. I mean, it's a huge problem, and I think a lot of the people in England are they got their head in the sand, like we do about climate change.
Well, I heard on the radio, and I didn't hear the whole thing, so I could be off, but I thought there was a movement now to do some sort of like re-voting.
A re-vote, yes.
Because people are like, wait, this is not what I voted for. We're tricked. So there are a lot of people who voted for the Brexit movement who now completely regret it.
Right.
They want to have a re-vote.
I can't imagine Brexit would pass now. It would be 70-30 or something. Because what they wanted to do, what they were voting for when they voted to leave the EU, not everybody, but was to kick the immigrants. We don't want the immigrants.
That's right.
But
it was all about Britain first.
Yeah.
Right?
But they didn't think about what it means for...
And they didn't
realize
it really meant Britain alone.
Alone, yeah. Britain on your own.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if it's actually true, but in the Inuit tribes, when they were really desperate straits and where food was scarce, the elderly residents, they'd put them on an ice floe and just give them a little shove out to sea. I'm not sure that actually happened, but that was reputed to have happened. But that's basically what they're England or UK just being completely isolated. Scotland doesn't want it. Northern Ireland doesn't want it. I don't know how people in Wales feel about it. I can't understand what they're saying. All right, we got next question. We got two more. We got to hurry up. Let's go. We're going to the Vatican, Vatican City. For this one, it's too tiny to show on a real map, so we just circled the area in general. Here's the question, although it's all academic at this point. Pope Francis recently indicated a willingness to reexamine what long-established church practice. Was it A, categorizing abortion as a cardinal sin, B, celibate priesthood, C, opposition to divorce, or D, the Vatican's annual hottest altar boys calendar? I felt that was in poor taste.
Yeah, that is.
But I don't.
Shame on you.
No, I don't. But I thought about it and I said, no, the Catholic Church needs to be reminded constantly. I have no qualms about reminding them constantly.
No, but you're reminding you're making fun of the victims.
I am not making fun of the victims. I am making fun of the Catholic Church, implying that they are not really serious about that. We have two answers of C.
We're not going to.
What is the correct answer, please? Brandon, it is B, celibate priesthood. Tough luck. You know, the real person suffering here is Amber Fiend.
So I apologize to Amber. You know, you were caught up in the horrible conspiracy by these two to humiliate
an innocent
me. Victim. Yeah, no, I mean, you know what? I make the executive call. Amber, you qualify for a free T-shirt.
How about
please let it. You win.
No, you have to get one answer right. You have to get the last answer right.
No, she wins.
All right, well, try anyway.
All right.
Okay, so yeah, so the situation, it's not like...
By the way, I knew A was not the correct answer because abortion is not a cardinal sin.
Right. And, you know, some of these things are, you know, there are various reasons for them not
That's
to
right.
be... But so the cardinals rarely get abortions. So it's not like Pope Francis is going to say, hey, it's a sex fest for all the priests. What the deal is that in very remote areas of the world... Especially like South America, they have very few priests, and one of the reasons, and they're losing priests and not replacing them, even though there are more Catholics than ever. And the reason is partially because they're not allowed to, they have to be celibate priests. They leave the priesthood because they want to abandon celibacy, or there are some priests who convert from like the Anglican Church to the Catholic Church, which I didn't know about. But Francis is opening up the formal discussion of this topic, especially meeting with some South American bishops. Also this week, there's a two-hour documentary on Italian television called The Choice, Priests and Love, that profiles more than a dozen men in four European countries who are either living clandestinely with women, have created their own unsanctioned church communities where married priests preside at Mass, or they left the Catholic priesthood altogether to marry. And Francis is sympathetic to them. Go to the first the story, please. Vocatio, an English and Italian association of these married priests, wrote Francis earlier this month pledging their solidarity as he copes with the global fallout of the sex abuse scandal, such as me making fun of the church for it, and once again offering their services in ministry. The head of Vocatio, former priest Rosario Mocchiaro, who married civilly in 1977, estimates that there are about 5,000 men in Italy alone who have left the priesthood, a third of whom would seek a return to married ministry if allowed. He said he was hopeful for progress under Francis and some sympathetic Italian bishops, saying they brought a new air and atmosphere to a long-standing problem. Now, realistically, it seems to me if once they open the... You know, they allow the camel's nose under the tent or the foot in the door or whatever, then eventually you're just going to have married priests. But this is something I didn't know, that the celibate priesthood has been a tradition of the Latin Rite Catholic Church since the 11th century, but no doctrine requires it, and many Eastern Rite Catholic churches do allow married men to be ordained. But as I said, the numbers of priests are dropping. And then go back to the second, back to the story. This is part that I found maybe the most interesting. Do we have this text graphic? No? Okay, I'll just read it. Opening the priesthood to married men, even in limited and localized places, would open the question of providing financially for the priests' families, an expense long cited as a key reason for the imposition of celibacy in the 11th century.
Yep.
The church didn't want its assets to pass down to priests' heirs. I didn't know that.
I knew that.
See, if only I'd asked that. Yes, it makes sense. But it's you know, they talk about it as if it's you got to be married to God and you dedicate your life to the church, but it's all about money.
It turns out the church lies sometimes.
Yeah.
It's not about that. It's about the money.
But there are already a lot of priest's children running around and they are ostracized and they suffer and there are people who are advocating on their behalf. So that's I don't know what do you guys think? I feel like if they do this, that's the end of celibacy for priests, because who's gonna?
It should be the end of it.
It should be the end of the Catholic. The Catholic Church
needs
to go. It is
unnatural. Well, that too. But it's unnatural to tell someone to be celibate for life. That is weird. And that's I really think that's one of the reasons why there's all this sex scandals.
You're right.
Because it's just not natural. I mean, you're forcing people to live in a way that's just not natural, and it comes out in horrible ways.
Right. And you have altar boys who are molested, and then often when you are molested as a child, you go on to molest later, so they become priests themselves, and it's this cycle that continues, and this is one way to potentially break that cycle. So I guess France is to be applauded for that. We got one last question, and it comes to us from where? Oh, Canada. All right, and what is the question? Canadian rapper John James McMurray recently died as a result of what? Was it A, an airplane wing-walking stunt gone wrong? B, an accident during a high-speed motorboat race? C, a massive coronary during a nightclub dance-off? Or D, moose attack? All right, it's all on the line for
Amber.
For Amber Fiend, although it's not really. Dave's 3-1, Steve's 0-4.
I'd like to see them again.
Dave wants to see the answers again.
It's not that important.
It is important, Dave. Just because you run away with this, like the Red Sox, you know.
I really wanted to do C, but I saw Steve put C up, so I couldn't.
Okay, we have one answer of B and one answer of C. What is the correct answer? It is, of course, A, an airplane wing walking stunt gone wrong. Yeah, wing walking. Who knew? Do people still know? I remember when I was a kid, hearing about, like in the 20s, wing walking was a real thing. You know, people did that. It was this, for a thrill or whatever, And then but it fell out of fashion, flappers and the Charleston, all sorts of things. But apparently, this guy, unfortunately, John James McMurray, was shooting a video, a rap video of some sort, and this accident occurred. They're not really sure why. There was a variety of plane stunts he was shooting. He was flying in a Cessna, like this one. He had apparently trained intensively for the stunt, but as he moved farther out onto a wing, the small Cessna went into a downward spiral. He held onto the wing too long, and by the time he let go, he didn't have time to open his parachute and died on impact. We have one. We can go to the story. Friends of McMurray paid tribute to his unbelievable talent for music. Rory Wayne Bushfield, who knew the rapper since childhood, told the star he had trained for the stunt for months. He planned for everything, he said. It should have been straightforward. It's one of those things we're not really sure what happened. I don't want to make light of it, but I just thought that wing walking was just
I was never into any of that stuff, like wing walking, tightrope walking, taking a car and driving really fast up a ramp and then jumping over a bunch of other cars.
Cramming a bunch of people into a phone booth.
Yeah, all those like stunts. Yeah. I was like, not that.
You weren't like an Evel Knievel fan?
Not really.
Yeah.
No, I don't care about that stuff.
Didn't do wing walking? I didn't know anybody did wing walking anymore. So that's, all right. So apparently, even though Steve went 0-5, Amber Fiend still gets a.
No, Amber Fiend gets it because I'm gonna make a new rule. If someone goes 0-4, okay, you get them all wrong. Getting them all wrong is as hard as getting them all right.
No, that's right? Not true.
No, it's hard because we're guessing, right?
Right,
but
you have two wrong answers, only one right one.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right. I know.
But
to get them all wrong, it's kind of hard.
No, it's. Yeah. I mean, you got in a couple years ago. You had a run of 12 in a row that you got wrong, and that was unprecedented. Somebody
that's hard to do.
The odds were like less than 1%
that's right.
of being able to do that. So you're extraordinary.
So the new rule is that someone goes 0-4, that person that you play for wins.
Yeah. And that was not factoring in D as a potential answer, because obviously D is never the correct
the
answer.
The last shall be first.
We should probably cap.
Okay, before we wrap up, we got to go, but I wanted to get a couple of quick predictions from my my colleagues on the on the panel about, because this is the last Friday post game we're going to do, the three
together,
of us, the Devil's Triumvirate, as I like to call us. Not the Devil's Triangle, because that's a drinking game. We don't want to encourage drinking. The Devil's Triumvirate before the midterms. And, this is the most important midterm election in our lifetime. Did you know that?
Yes, I've heard that somewhere.
Yeah. I thought it was 4 years ago, but it turns out it's and 4 years before that and 4 years before that. But it turns out it's this one. So I want to get, I want to find out from you guys who you predict is going to win what the final results are in the Senate and the House. And I'm going to ask you about a couple other races and see what you, so Dave, Steve, and Malcolm, our predictions four. I'll have you go first for the House. How many Democrats or Republicans? Final numbers.
220 Republican, 215 Democrat.
All right, Steve?
I don't know.
Just make up numbers.
All right, 800 Democrats and 700 Republicans.
How about just, do you think the Democrats are going to retake the House?
Yes, they'll retake the House.
By how many seats?
By 17 seats.
Okay, so add, what is it, 218 plus 17?
Yeah, I got it. And I'm going to predict, I'm going to guess $1. No, wait, that's a different game. I'm sorry. You actually took exactly what my pick was going to be, but I'll go Republicans 222.
Nah, you can take
to Democrats 213. I do not think the Democrats are going to retake the House, and it's going to be devastating for, it should be devastating for them, but they'll just blame it on Bernie Sanders and Susan Sarandon, of course. Okay, so now we got some high, those are, you get 5 points each for those, and 3 points for each of these high-profile Senate races. Cruz O'Rourke, who's going to win? Steve.
Well, I'm looking at my app called Down Ticket, which is a sponsor for TYT.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the Down Ticket app tells me that Cruz is leading by 3%, and he's trailing in the fundraising by $180,000 to Beto O'Rourke.
Mm.
This is going to be a heartbreaker, but I think Cruz will win.
Okay.
Ugh, I hope I'm wrong.
Okay, so Steve says Cruz. Dave?
Cruz.
I also say Cruz. Feinstein de Leon?
Feinstein. I don't even know why you put that on there.
Steve?
So, according to Down Ticket, Feinstein is leading by $19 million in funding, okay, over Kevin de Leon. Ridiculous. And she's leading by 10% in the polls. So, I've already voted. I voted for Kevin de Leon already. I sent him my absentee, mail-in ballot.
But wait, something else could happen, and then you know, interim to change your mind about
right.
Dianne Feinstein.
No, she's gonna, but she's gonna win.
She's gonna win. Yeah. Okay, I have her winning too. Okay, McCaskill against Hawley in Missouri.
Well, while Steve looks it up, I'm going depressing on this one, Hawley.
Okay, Dave says Hawley. I'm gonna say McCaskill. And who do you think, Steve?
I don't even know how to spell McCaskill.
McCaskill. But you don't need to. You know, this is supposed to be. Come on, be your own man, Steve. Come on.
All right. I think she's going to lose.
Okay, you're going to go with Haskell. Okay. Cinema McSally in Arizona.
McSally, this dream that there's going to be a Democratic senator from Arizona is not happening.
Dave says McSally. I'm going to say Cinema on that one. It's crazy, but maybe.
Yeah, me too.
You're okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Heller Rosen in Nevada. Dean Heller.
Incumbent against... will win, Heller.
Dave's got the incumbent coming in. I'm going to go for the challenger in that one, too.
Well, according to Down Ticket, Heller is leading by 3% and leading the fundraising by $1.5 million. But I'm going to go with Rosen.
All right. And you guys can play along at home, make your picks as well. Scott, okay, we got a big race here. This, the Rick Scott, Bill Nelson race in Florida.
Big race, but Bill Nelson will win.
Oh, Dave's going to go with Nelson. I'm going to go with Nelson also.
I'm also going with Nelson because according to Down Ticket, Rick Scott is trailing by 1%, and he's trailing by $11.2 million in fundraising. By the way, you can also donate to your candidates right here, right in the app. Down Ticket.
All right, Tennessee, we got Bredesen against Marshall Blackburn.
The toughest one of all, but I'm going Blackburn.
I'm going Blackburn, and I think she's a little bit scary to me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go with Bredesen just... She's awful. She is horrific.
She is really terrifying. She's like that woman from, Aunt Lydia from Handmaid's Tale.
No.
Just terrifying.
Well, imagine the House and the Senate are just like they are now, Republican controlled with Trump. But now we have Blackburn on top of that. It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like the Supreme Court. It was terrible with Kennedy, and now it's even worse with Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Okay, Heitkamp, Heidi Heitkamp against Kramer in North Dakota.
Heitkamp's going down.
You got Heitkamp winning?
I have her losing.
I'm getting her losing also.
I'm getting like these intense emails and Facebook posts from her camp saying, please give us money right away, Yeah, like desperate please.
All right, last one, Donnelly against Braun in Indiana.
Donnelly holds on.
Who cares? Donnelly will win, but who cares?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Donnelly also. All right, we got five governor's races, then we'll go. We won't get into the key House races. All right, Gillum DeSantis.
Gillum.
Okay, we all say Gillum, all right. Kemp Abrams in Georgia, that's a big one.
It's gonna be Kemp. Yeah. I would love for Kemp to go down, but I think he's gonna win.
Kobach against Kelly in Kansas.
I'm going Kelly.
I'm going Kobach.
I'm going Kelly also. And you're going to...
You guys are just optimistic.
I know, it's crazy to think. DeWine Cordray in Ohio.
I'm going Cordray.
Cordray.
Yeah, we're all going Cordray. And in Wisconsin, Walker Evans. Scott Walker, my nemesis. I thought he was going to be president by now.
I hate that guy
too. But I thought, but bear in mind, if you're listening to any of my predictions, I did think Scott Walker was going to be the Republican nominee in 2016.
Him early on, too.
Yeah, I'm thinking Walker will win. Is this even a close race? I don't even know.
I don't know. I'm going to go with Evans.
Trailing by 7% according to Down Tickets. I'm going to go with Evans.
Really? Oh, it's awful. By the way, Walker Evans is a real person.
Yeah, that's true. Who is Walker Evans?
Photographer, a writer, author, or something?
I'm confusing Walker Percy. Okay, so listen, we got to go. They're kicking us out, just like Jeb Bush. Thank you so much for watching the Friday Post Game. We appreciate it. I hope you had fun with us. We love you. We love the Proud 19 who tune in. Appreciate something a little different. Hope you have a great weekend. And as always, stay strong.